affordable renter's insurance can be.
The FBI says the investigation into Mississippi's prison bribery scandal is nearing the end. Randy Bell has the story.
The Bureau says there are still a few more people to be charged in the case, which has been in the courts now for 2 years. Supervisory Special Agent Mark Stuckey oversees the FBI public corruption investigations in Mississippi, and he says the people who paid bribes to former Corrections Commissioner Chris Epps to get prison contracts tried to claim they were the victims. But
they had a number of years to come forward to the FBI and say, hey, this man is asking for money to give my company a contract, and they never did that.
The FBI is hoping the prison sentences that are being handed down in the Epps case will encourage other people who've paid bribes to public officials or law enforcement officers to come clean. Randy Bell in Jackson.
Investigators are trying to figure out what caused a building to partially collapse in Newark. Witnesses say bricks came crashing down on 15th Avenue and South 8th near a girl playing yesterday.
And when we realized the building was about to go, you know, all I could think about was that little girl, and I was just thinking that, well, I just hope she's not under that rubble.
And finally, you may want to try to cool off on this hot summer day with a slice of watermelon. Why is that? Well, it's officially National Watermelon Day. But make sure to spit those seeds in the trash or outside, because you don't want to get Mama mad. This is USA Radio News. For more, we're on the web at usaradio.com. I'm Russ Jones.
Welcome to Talented People. It's 4:01 on August 3rd. Hope you're having a great day. We're going to share an interview today with Scott Crass. He's the author of Statesmen and Mischief Makers. It's a series of books out that you will just love to hear this interview. He's so funny. He's a local New Jersey author, and he's just got such insights and almost secrets on a lot of the past mischief makers and most prominent of those serving the United States. So we're going to get to that in a second, but I wanted to let you know, tonight mostly clear with a low about 59 degrees, mostly sunny all day Thursday, the high is 83, excuse me, mostly clear with a low about 61 on Thursday night, and then sunny, mostly sunny all day, the high of 84. You can hear my voice is shot from talking too much. Friday night, chance of showers again, low about 67. And then possible thunderstorms, but mostly partly sunny with a high of 89 on Saturday. Chance of showers and thunderstorms before 9 p.m. on Saturday night. And then sunny with a high of 83 on Sunday and mostly clear to low about 61. We're going to go to a quick break and start our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Thanks so much for watching. Today our special guest is author Scott Crass. He has written three books, but the first one that we're talking about today is Statesmen and Mischief Makers, and this is part of Volume 1. We're going to talk about it. You can see how big this book is. Scott is a political science and a communications specialist and author, and he's going to tell us all about the Statesmen and Mischief Makers. So, again, thanks for watching. Welcome to the show, Scott. Well,
thank you so much for having me.
That's
a pleasure.
My pleasure. Yeah, all right, let's talk about you. Just jump right in and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've always been interested in politics and history and the presidency and anything that really has to do with the past. Mm-hmm. And I it started, I guess, at the age of five when my mother bought me a president's book, and it just blossomed from here on in. I wore out literally the book. I literally wore it out from turning the pages so much. I memorized everything there was to know about the president, their wives, their achievements, even their pets. And from there on in, it just blossomed even further into politics, congressional offices, anybody who impacted public affairs. I guess I was just so always precocious
cute.
Like that.
Isn't that something? It's just natural, Warren. And like, weren't you like five and your favorite word was politics?
Yeah, I was absolutely five, yeah. And my friends were going out there learning how to toss a ball and shooting golf with miniature golf balls. And I was reading about FDR and Dwight David Eisenhower and John F. Kennedy. And it's just crazy like that, yeah.
I just love that story so much. I can picture you, too. I can just picture you in the dog-eared and the little hardcover and your mom looking at the book. Boy, I found a nice gift for him.
Yeah.
So your whole life has been revolving around this, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And you've been driven towards this. Yeah. And so tell
Not me. Totally. I've always had some side interests, music. I'm a great Sinatra lover, oldies. Classical, but, you know, for the most part, my first love absolutely is history and the presidency mm-hmm. and Congress.
And I love the way that you know all these details about everybody, like you say, about their wives and their dogs.
Yeah.
So tell us about, like, okay, with the book, there's three volumes.
There are, or there will be. The volume three is not quite out yet, but there will
be. Yeah, three is not here yet, but we'll have volume one and two. We're talking about volume one today. I love first the title, Statesmen and Mischief Makers. Statesmen and Mischief Makers. You can see the back. And you can go to the website, by
That's
the way,
terrific.
And learn all about the book and everything about Scott and everything else. But tell us, where did you get the title from? It's such a creative title, and, you know, you're lucky to get the website, and so.
Yeah, and I was lucky to come up with the title. Also, I was trying to find something that would be a positive and a negative, because that's really what the book is about. Wonderful people, people who have necessarily, for whatever lack of a better word, messed up on occasion, people who have given us reason to laugh, in some cases frown and say, how did they get to be where they were? But I really wanted to drag in a title that was going to impact everything and that was going to bring in something about the good, the bad, and the ugly, so to speak. So statesman was actually the easy part, because that's when you're coming up with reputable terms and terms that you want to fit, I think that's a lot easier than coming up with a term that's going to be a little bit less flattering. Mm-hmm. So it took me a while. I was thinking statesmen and gadflies, but that's more limited to just people who walk in and tend to just say whatever is on their mind. They're not really irreputable, so to speak. But that's finally one night it hit me. I had my eureka moment sitting on the beach, I think. Mischief Makers,
yeah.
Which is another one of my loves, but Mischief Makers.
I love it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I thought somebody had to have taken that. I mean, I just couldn't. It's too good for it to have been thought out by little old me, but all of a sudden it came to me. I did a little research. No such book that I'm aware of, so all of a sudden I seized the day, and that
wow.
was it.
That
so Statesmen
so
and Mischief
cool.
Makers. And that really encompasses everything.
Yeah. Now, okay, so you did have this epiphany at the beach. I know you love the Jersey Shore.
Absolutely, yeah, it's my second home.
And you've been in New Jersey your whole life?
My whole life, yeah.
And so when you have this time on the beach, you have 150 stories.
In this book, yes, in just one volume.
Books, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Boy.
It's so much information, but it's so easy to read. They're short. How
yeah.
about?
Thanks to the hotel business centers and the libraries. You know, when they weren't open, I needed some place to work, so... A shout out to them.
A shout out is right. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about like the criteria. Like what are the personalities? What's the, you know, it's 1960 to
1988. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And?
And that's the period from Kennedy to Reagan. Kennedy was elected in 1960, and of course Reagan left office in 1988. So with one or two exceptions, you generally had to have been in office between those 28 years. Either had to have been elected after 1960 or left office before 1988. The reason is that's really a transition from Kennedy to Reagan. That's really the period and the two presidencies that I think are not only most known, but they think most impactful. Mm-hmm. So I started out just on the world stage, and people who are known, people who are beloved, people who have the most stories and tidbits to tell. So I figured that's really why I wanted to seize that period and talk about political figures who are unknown, but nonetheless who served ably and in some cases with humility, but between that time.
Yeah.
The time frame.
So now, okay, so how did you start? Like, okay, like I know you said, you know, you knew who you wanted to initially get, and you knew the time period that you wanted to stay between. So what happened? How did you get Owen and How long did it take you to do each story? Tell us about that.
Well, it's funny. I started writing for a website called The Moderate Voice. And it was we had just concluded the presidential cycle at that point, the 2012 cycle. He wanted people to write about national affairs, about current affairs. But he really needed pieces on anything contemporary, anything that might make it interesting. His goal was really, and I say his name is Joe Gandelman. He's the author of The Moderate Voice. He really needed people just to get people, write stories that would get people talking. Mm-hmm. So I, at that time, had brought a book, Congressional Anecdotes, and it just told some great short stories and great short humorous tales about people who just really made official Washington laughing. And I ended up writing one or two of those anecdotes, and I found in my desire to write, because that's what I am, I found my desire just to look up a little bit more facts and get some more background about the person. So one thing led to another. I figured it wasn't going to be enough to write necessarily the anecdote that was going to make people laughing. I wanted to explain a little bit about the people. So that certainly took up a lot more time and research than I had anticipated. But one thing after that, one I figured in my passion for that, I started writing a little bit more, and then more, and more, and then I said, well, I have to include this guy, I have to include that guy. Finally, I just said to myself, you know what, I'm going to turn it into a book.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
No, but it does make me laugh thinking about it, because I was thinking that before, you're almost done, and oh, I forgot that guy.
Yeah. And I think I drove myself crazy doing that.
How long did it take you to write, volume one?
Well, I turned it into, there's no quick answer to that, only because it was originally supposed to be one volume. Mm-hmm. And then it got to be so diverse, so broad with the stories. So many people were famous, yet other people were not. So I found that in order to make it effective, I couldn't possibly do just one. And then in turn, I figured there was no way I could limit it to just two. So at the end of the day, I decided to have three separate categories. One, the more semi-well-known figures, people who might be, whose names might ring a bell with people, but they wouldn't necessarily be household names. Mm-hmm. That would be volume one. Volume two would be the people who wouldn't be known at all, but they have stories that are just so fascinating, mm-hmm. and just so delightful, and stories that should be so well preserved. That would be number two. And they'd all be members of Congress. Volume three, I finally decided to just make exclusively to the governors. Governors who either shaped their states, who obtained notoriety, if not for good reasons, corruption, etc. Hence the term statesmen and mischief makers.
Right.
And that's really what that was all about.
I just love your brain. When I'm watching you, I'm thinking about how considerate you are. I'm thinking about this is a great story, okay? Because you've got to hear how much work he went to make sure that the stories were accurate, the backgrounds, each of them, don't forget somebody, and then to turn around and say, how can I separate these out so that everybody gets, like you said, in the right place with the courtesy
That's
of
right.
the information, regardless of if they were a statesman or a mischief maker. So tell us about the experience of, I'm telling you, I'm fascinated.
Yeah,
it's so much information, and the way that you talk, you actually are like a filing cabinet. You can
yeah,
see how you know those details
yeah.
about everything, and I love that. Tell us about an example of a family that you had to reach out to, find out the information, the whole thing. How did they take it from beginning to end?
Well, if I could just tell you, reaching out to the families was a book in itself. I actually thought about when this is finally done completely about writing a book because that was absolutely exasperating on some occasions. I literally can remember being at the Skylark Diner where I typically eat in Edison after doing my work at either Rutgers or Middlesex or one of the local libraries. Mm-hmm. And I was practically in tears. With one of my regulars, and she said to me, "You seem, a little bit subdued. What's wrong?" I'm like, "I literally just tried calling about 10 family members of about 5 different families, and I couldn't reach a single one of them. Either they, I used obituaries to get in touch with them, because not them obviously,
that
but their family members,
right.
And because that was the only way I had to do it." And I could not literally find people, either the numbers that were listed on 411, which is supposed to be modern and up-to-date, they'd be disconnected. They'd have somebody who moved. In some cases, the numbers were just completely wrong, or in many cases, they weren't listed at all. And I was so despondent at that point that I'm like, and this was in October of 2014.
So funny.
I said to myself, you know, I don't feel that I'm ever going to get this done. I had to get permission for these cover images, and you see they're about, they somehow miraculously squeezed in about 26. I had to get permission from each of the family members, and I couldn't contact them.
Yeah,
so
right.
Ultimately, though, I was able to find somebody who knew somebody, and all's well that ends well, but it didn't start out that way.
Well, I just can't imagine on there.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Side of the family, you know, they're like, okay, this person probably has passed, or they're not interested, they're retired, or whatever. And basically, you know, there's this guy coming out, wants to find out the story, and it's like, no, I don't want to share it.
Yeah.
But then you were able to get that from everybody because they wanted to talk to you because of the way that you care about the person in the story.
And I think they showed that. They showed that I was genuine. They might have been a little bit suspicious at first, you know, how, what does this person want with my father? I had one person grill me like you wouldn't believe, but once I actually showed him, see, I had the benefit for the most part of having the pieces written already.
Uh-huh.
So once I was able to fax them or email them my cover and the piece itself, they saw how serious I was, and then they'd say, you know, just try to get you. There are some things that need to be added to, and I'll help you. There are some tales that you don't know, some tales that people would like. But once we get going on that, then, you know, I think this will be the absolute perfect piece. Amplification, that's really the word I'm looking for.
I just love that.
Yeah.
I think it's just so great. And I also think that, you know, like you said, some of the people may not have even known the story, and then they were reading it for the first time, and then they were actually signing off on it, learning about it, and saying, wow.
I've had kids who subjects who say, you know more than I do about my father.
That's
heartwarming.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, you think about, now that you have this, and there's three, again, volumes. We're talking about volume one right now, States and Mischief Makers. But the information that you have gone out and gotten and then have preserved for history for all time in these books, they're so important for, you know, for you to be speaking in universities, colleges, students, history interests. You know, I mean, it's just such a great book. Tell us a couple of, like, one of your favorite stories.
Okay,
examples.
Well, I guess one of my favorite story would have to be somebody like Bob Eckert, who's actually profiled in the second volume. He's a Texas congressman. He'd always wear bow ties. He'd bicycle from the Capitol to the White House, and he was a very extraordinarily brilliant lawyer. But his goal was really, and he was he'd be a profile in Courage without question, because he was a liberal representing suburban Houston. Now, we know how Republican Texas is now at the national level. At the time, it was a little mixed, but it was still an oil country. Mm-hmm. And he sat on the Commerce Committee, which, of course, regulates a number of different areas and industries. But that's oil country. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't afraid to go after big oil and say that, we want energy to be more efficient and see it used more efficiently and see it promoted more efficiently. And he earned the wrath of the oil industry, and they finally ended up taking him down electorally. He did lose re-election. But he was just a very special and brilliant person, and he had a mind like many other people did not, because he was such a skilled lawyer. You know, think today of some of the Alan Dershowitzes and the famous lawyers. He actually had that kind of mind. You know, he died right after the Clinton-Lewinsky affair, literally affair, but he didn't think that Bill Clinton should have to say, and this is according to his daughter, he didn't think that Bill Clinton had to say anything, because he didn't think that anybody's personal transgressions were anybody's business. Whether the public policy demanded it, whether the polls demanded it, whether Congress demanded it, he really didn't think it was anybody's business in any way whatsoever. So I thought that was kind of neat, and I thought that was something I was grateful. Stories like that, I thought, really made the book.
So, like, when you actually heard that from the daughter, did you go back and redo what you had written and add that in?
Because there was always room for amplification, and that's. And by the way, I tend to talk fast, so if you need to give me a speeding ticket, that's
no worries.
I could see that happening. But there was always room for amplification. I mean, I'd many of the things that I got were from my personal books or online, of course, mm-hmm. because that's how research is done. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing like picking up the phone and having actual conversations. Mm-hmm. And once I talked to these people, it was just impossible to... let me put it this way. I'd be disappointed if I didn't have the expectation of having to go back and do a revision or a correction or an addition, then I wouldn't have accomplished nearly what I set out to do. Another good story, I had one person, Julia Butler Hansen, a congresswoman from Washington, one of the first women to gain actual power. She had a chairmanship of the Appropriations Committee, a subcommittee on appropriations. I believe she was the first. They call them cardinals. And her son, who actually told me this, said that she was a very tough person to work for. He was actually in her office one day and said to one of her employees, have you ever seen the movie Patton? And he'd say, no, but I work for her. But she took no prisoners as far as being on committee. And if anybody thought that she was going to be pushed around because she was a woman, they had another thing coming. One person, the chair of the committee was a guy named George Mahon from Texas. And he didn't really look too kindly on a woman being on her committee. You know, he was the old school hillbilly country. And he'd said to her once, Julia, you know, you're going to have to trim your committee budget by about $200 million. And she's like, you know, I don't know how I can do that. But, you know, she got to work, and the next day she came back. She's like, I cut a little there. And she's like, Mr. Chairman, I met your request. We were able to trim the budget by $200. And she said to him, he said to her, gee, Julia, that's wonderful. How did you do it? Where did you get the savings? And she replied stoically, from your district, Mr. Chairman. So you can tell he didn't quite take kindly to that. But
I love it.
Yeah.
So, like, seriously, so what about, like, a scandalous story? So something fun?
Oh, I don't even know where to start.
What I love about your book, too, is it's witty. Like, you have a very fun personality, so you're sharing it as though you're talking right to the reader.
Yeah.
And you're kind of making a little jest at some stories that were just, like, complicated.
Well, don't forget, Mischief Makers, at the sound of it, seems to be a negative connotation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not completely, because that just means they were characters, so to speak. Mm-hmm. A little bit of eccentricity, a little bit of style that's not an everyday, less than conservative style, shall we say. But it doesn't necessarily encompass scandals. I'll give you one example of the scandal, if that's okay, and
sure.
One example also of somebody who was just so super eccentric.
Okay.
A guy by the name of Daniel Flood, we spoke about this during the radio interview. Mm-hmm. He was from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. He literally built Wilkes-Barre to the point with grants and with various projects. He had a stucco mustache, which you could actually see on the book, not from here, but he used to be a performer in his heyday, right after World War I, on the stage. And one of his characters was Shakespeare. Many times he absolutely forgot. This is a very gruff person, spare no prisoners. But he actually forgot a couple of times, conveniently, that he was no longer on the Shakespeare stage. He was now a member of Congress. But because he was so entertaining, he used to be asked to preside over the House. How entertaining was he? He'd come onto the House floor wearing his cape many times. But just not only that, I mean, the cape and the mustache, he was a character in itself. And when he was conducting a debate, when he was presiding over a debate, he'd use theatrical terms. He'd say, the gentleman on stage one, Mr. Cederberg, has 30 minutes for his debate. The gentleman on stage two has about 30 more minutes. And in the center, in central stage, controlling the gavel, is Flood. And when he calls curtains, that's it. He was leading over a debate once, a catastrophe, in his home state of Pennsylvania, his region, Hurricane Agnes, back in 1972. And he literally usurped the defense secretary for citing his demands and saying, we need the bags and we need this, we need that, we need the Defense Department to come out. And finally he said to the people, you know, when a debate, when the stage goes on a little long, when that goes on a little too long, you know it's time to call curtains. So he just always used the stage mentality. But nobody would really cross him because he controlled the purse strings. Mm-hmm. So that's really, and he did find scandal later in his life, but he wasn't really particularly notorious for scandal. It was more his personal style. Mm-hmm. But you want to talk about scandal, a guy named Wayne Hayes, and that name is probably more on the, if not, it's certainly a household name to people. They don't necessarily know why, and that's really why I wrote the book.
Love it.
He controlled, there are so many things I can tell you about him, but he controlled, he was the chairman, the autocratic chairman of the House Administration Committee. That was known as the mayor of Capitol Hill, that position. He would literally, in those days, be responsible for not only room use in the Capitol, but employees, in which case he'd sign the checks of every single employee, which is why they wanted to, they were afraid to cross him. But he and he was known as a very, very, what's the word I'm looking for here, irascible person, not positive in any way, shape, or form, but he gained nationwide notoriety when he employed as his secretary an Elizabeth Ray, 32 years his junior. She made no qualms about telling him that she couldn't type. She her phone answering skills were not very good at all. But she was a 32-year-old blonde, well endowed, so to speak, if I may say that, absolutely blonde. And she appeared in Playboy, so that was enough for Hayes. And he'd be having an affair with her on the side.
Oh boy!
Ultimately, he'd finally get married to somebody else, and she'd say, for lack of a better word, to use a technical term, do I still have to continue sleeping with you? And she'd say, well, let's see how you do. He actually assigned her a phone number, 555-5555. So,
really?
I mean, he, I guess, wasn't a very thoughtful mischief maker, but finally that became, and he was ultimately sanctioned by the ethics committee, and that was really his undoing. He had to resign from there. People still voted for him. They said to him, and this was a case with so many of my stories because they really were their communities. You know, Hayes was part of Ohio. I mean, Daniel Flood was part of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. People, based on the favors that he's done and based on the recommendations and the problems that he helped his constituents solve, they had no qualms about sending him back to office. But eventually, you know, these things could only last for so long. And, once the ethics committee got involved with that, Wayne Hayes finally, unfortunately, had to leave office.
Just amazing stories and just told so well. It is interesting what you said there about so many times it was the case where that they were reelected or they were supported by the community regardless of whether or not they were a statesman or a mischief maker, because they did so much for the community.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite story as to anyone that sticks out as the best of the stories in your mind of a person?
There was a gentleman. Well, there are two stories. One is Claire Engel. That may be a semi-household name, although not really. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book, because people should be preserved who aren't the... I tell people these aren't about the Kennedys or the Reagans or the right. Nixons. These are about the people in some cases who helped make them who they were and who helped shape their presidencies in some in some cases. But there was a gentleman named Claire Engel from California. He was elected in the famous class of 1958, which saw about 20 new Democrats take office. You know, it was the Eisenhower recession, the six-year itch, so to speak. And he took office, and he helped in many ways shepherd the Civil Rights Act into fruition. But a tragic thing happened as the Civil Rights Bill was coming into final passage, and everybody knew it was going to be a matter of time. But Claire Engel had a race with time. He was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Oh. And by the time the Civil Rights Act was ready to be taken up, after months of debate and months of countless amendments, dilatory tactics, he literally did not have weeks to live. His face was swollen, and he knew that. But he wasn't about to miss what could have been a crucial vote. You know, you needed 67 votes for cloture. It got 71, but he wasn't going to take any chances. So they wheeled him in, and when the clerk called his name, Mr. Engel, he couldn't speak at that point. So he pointed to his eye and signified that he wanted to vote yes, that he was going to vote aye on the bill. So when he signified that, the clerk acknowledged that he was going to say Mr. Engel was an aye in favor of the bill, and naturally it passed. It had 71 votes, but he was one of them. One of my...
I love that story.
One story that was absolutely heartwarming, and this is a prime example of not knowing about somebody until you actually spoke to the family. A guy by the name of Bob McGee gave me more information on and tidbits on his son, on his father, Gale McGee, a senator from Wyoming, than I could ever, ever have imagined. He wasn't just a senator. He was a senator who had an extraordinary amount of foreign policy experience. He took on a great deal. He was so skilled and so adroit on foreign affairs that when he gave a speech on the Senate floor, Robert Byrd, who became majority leader years later, but he was a longtime senator and colleague of McGee, listed it in his book as the top 100 most compelling speeches that he's heard on the Senate floor. But he was also just a wonderful human being. Nothing was ever about him. I said to Bob, you know, your father, when it comes to foreign affairs, doesn't stand out. Because, you know, he's overtaken by the Wayne Morrises and the Bill Fulbrights. Why is that? And he goes, well, you have to understand, nothing was ever about Gale McGee.
Oh,
he always wanted to do things behind the scenes. He never cared about who got the credit. And many people told me that you'll... that my father always had a saying, their fathers always had a saying, you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish if you don't really care who got the credit.
Oh, wow. That is so... Hi, I'm Jeannie Murphy. Welcome to Talented People. We appreciate you watching in. This week we have a special guest. He's a longtime resident of Princeton, and his company is called Entourage Yearbooks. He's the CEO, and his name's Elias Joe. Welcome to the show, Elias.
Well, thank you very much, Jeannie.
Thanks so much for coming in. We have a strong interest in learning about the yearbook, history of yearbooks. Everybody out there knows that you either have one. If you don't get one at the end of the year, you regret it. Let's start from the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm a founder of Entourage Yearbooks. The company was founded back in 2006. And basically, you know, I was looking for a business to start. We were looking at a lot of different type of opportunities. Yearbooks in particular, if you know anything about the yearbook history, there's been a lot of problems in yearbooks in terms of yearbooks being a little bit expensive, taking a long time to make, getting students involved, the evolution of social media, and kids becoming less interested in yearbooks. And so we just saw a lot of opportunities there to kind of bring technology and service to make the yearbook experience better for schools.
So that's well, it's interesting that you think of it. I know back from, you know, way too long ago,
yeah.
Like even if you miss the day of portraits, there's like a black picture, you know, you missed it. You're not even in the history of the yearbook at that time,
that's
right?
That's right.
But now with all, like you say, the social media and all of the technology.
That's right.
So you saw these opportunities and you started in 2006. And so what happened?
So we just started with just one school at the time. It was Columbia Business School, which was the school I was attending.
Nice choice.
And, you know, and we had a great success over there. They were creating a book for about $100 a book and selling it to about 700 students. And we made that same book for $60. And we got more students involved and we used more web technology. And so putting that all together was kind of the beginning of that whole process where we realized, listen, this can be done better.
Right.
This can be done cheaper, and this can be done in a way that really focuses more on what the schools want. And so we built on that over the years, and so now we're probably serving close to about 4,000 schools. And that formula stays the same. Oh, thank you. That formula stays the same, which is, listen, we got to create an efficient business model so that we can have affordable books for the students. We've got to provide the best technology. We've got to do the best that we can in terms of providing resources so that the teachers and the parents who are organizing yearbooks have the tools they need. And we've got to start integrating more of the social media. We've got to integrate more of what the students are using, Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, into the yearbook experience just to make sure that everybody stays involved. So that's been our journey over the last, you know, 7 or 8 or 9 years almost now. And that's been kind of driving where we are today.
Well, love the way that you were thinking and the vision of it back in 2006. People love to see it, I know, and learn about technology. I'm thinking of traditional yearbooks.
Sure.
And now you're talking about 2015 plus, moving on to almost 16 here. So tell us about your yearbooks. Like,
sure.
Tell us about the process, everything about it from the beginning. Like,
well, so, you know, the yearbook process is, it's an industry that's been around for 100 years. So in terms of what's the same, there's a lot of things that are the same, you know, collecting the pictures, getting the students' names, editing the book, and publishing the book. Over the course of the last 10 years and 20 years and, you know, the last couple of years, there's a lot that has been changing. So in terms of integrating, you know, so one of the things happening is there's this explosion of people taking photographs these days. More
people
are taking pictures on their phone than any other device in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I read a statistic recently that something like 1 billion photographs are uploaded every single day. The problems we used to have 20 years ago, which was, you know, what book pictures are we going to put in the book, are totally different today. Now it's a problem of, okay, we've got so many pictures, what are we taking out?
Yeah.
And it's also about cataloging and making sure, hey, do we got the right students in the book and the right coverage and all of that.
What an undertaking.
So that all of that has changed over the years. You know, the other parts of it, the internet. You know, used to be that you used to have to work at the school to make your book. And now you can design your yearbook at home. You can work on it on your mobile device. There's a lot more opportunities to kind of not only create your content, but create it while it's happening. So we've seen examples of people where they're creating and taking pictures and, you know, preparing the content while they're at the event now. So this is kind of a lot more of that live media that's going on, that's trickling. You know, originally it's happening with the, you know, with the television media and online media, and now it's happening with yearbook media.
Right. So, like, is the yearbook, like, go to the school system? Did you have to go back and train the teachers, educators, the editorial department, the yearbook club? I mean, everybody has to learn about all these new tools that are available, right?
Absolutely. It's kind of a virtuous cycle in terms of how the transition is happening. I mean, teachers themselves, as they come in, they want to change. Mm-hmm. They don't want to make the yearbooks that they made a couple years ago. They want this one to be better. They want this one to be different. They want this one to incorporate more students. And so they have ideas as to kind of how to put that together. But looking for the right company that actually offers the different services has been a struggle. So what we do is we come along and we look at what they're asking for. We look at the landscape of technology and try to bring it together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you see in the Entourage Yearbooks platform is you see an online experience where it incorporates not just, you know, okay, you can design a great yearbook online, but where can I get ideas? You know, how do I teach these students about journalism? How do I take great photography? How do I use Photoshop? You know, these are all things that we've kind of incorporated into one platform.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true that the learning is happening.
So now, is it a, you know, traditional at the end of the year type of a physical book, or is it only electronic?
Well, Well, the short answer is it's still a physical book.
Okay.
The longer answer is that it's changing. And so, you know, we at Entourage have, you know, what our belief is as to what the future of yearbooks will be. And, you know, we believe yearbooks are going to be around for a long time, but we do believe it's going to change. So right now you get a physical book, which is a culmination of all your experience and photographs, and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But what we believe that it can be and what it should be and what it's transforming into is that it's both a physical book and an online experience, mm-hmm. where you can look at your book, you can see links, you can see QR codes. You can go and say, okay, what's going on these days with these classes and these students? You know, let's watch a video of what happened at this pep rally. So being able to kind of create this integrated experience.
That is so cool, though. It really is.
So that's really the direction it's going. You know, yeah. That didn't exist 5-10 years ago, and it's coming in now. You know, mm-hmm. some of the schools, they're adopting it. They're trying it out. They're really having some fun with it.
Oh, so. I bet. What about, so your company is one of the fastest growing yearbook companies.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you about, where does this begin? Like, at what age does someone actually start to recognize and become part of your, like, you know, yearbook circle?
What you mean in terms of actually creating a yearbook?
Yes, or even needing it or wanting it. I mean, if they're young and...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so a couple of things that we've been seeing is, one is that, you know, I talked a bit before about the explosion of photographs. So there's just a lot more pictures. And so what we see now happening, I mean, much more so than years past, is students are getting yearbooks at younger and younger ages. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest segments that I've seen grow this year is actually at the preschool level, where preschool students are now ordering yearbooks of their graduations, and they have their cap and gowns and all the events in the year put together. Now, that's clearly put together by the parents and the teachers, but it's a product that more schools are adopting. You know, there's plenty of content. They need they just need to kind of put it together, and it's something that they store. So that's something that we're seeing. And, you know, being able to use those pictures year after year, that's another thing that we're seeing, which is, you know, I'll give you an example. This is, we do the preschool yearbook, we do the elementary school yearbook, we do the junior high school yearbook. Mm-hmm. And so now with the fact that you can store all those photos, you can index them, you can start creating yearbooks at later ages that incorporates all the photos that were in before. So now that yearbook not only becomes a snapshot of that student for that 1 year, but for their whole, you know, across
like
many years.
Like a year. Yearbook scrapbook.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I've seen schools use that very effectively.
Yeah. Well, what about, like, let's talk a little bit about funding and schools. They're always looking for, you know, revenue sources and so on. So talk to
Absolutely.
That a little bit.
Well, so, you know, the biggest thing we hear is funding issues and funding help that's needed at the school, both for the technology to create the yearbook as well as for actually funding the yearbook itself. Mm-hmm. You know, I presented recently at our advisors conference. And we had done some research, and that, you know, technology spend for schools is not keeping pace with how fast education is growing. So a majority of schools don't have enough money for funding their technology. Mm-hmm. You know, Entourage, we come up with a lower price book. So, mm-hmm. you know, historically people are used to paying $80, $90, $100 for a high school yearbook. You know, working with a company like ours, really focus more on the platform and the technology, you know, you're getting that same book for $60 to $70. Now, what we're seeing is schools using that as a way to save funds in the creation of the yearbook so they can invest it back into their technology. And so it's through this kind of working together with the schools that we see these yearbook programs growing versus kind of some of the historic problems that you see, which is, you know, you got big books that are expensive, buy rates are going down, you know, students want to get involved because the books are too expensive and nobody's buying them. And so you got to break that cycle.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Visual of like the encyclopedias, you know?
Yeah.
You have 24 plus, and now all of a sudden it's like this big. But what you're describing, I love the way that it's just, it's technology. I mean, it's got to be changing. How do you keep up with it? How do you keep up and are able to stay ahead of it knowing that everything revolves around that?
Well, you know, so there's a couple. I wouldn't say that I try to keep ahead of it, but I definitely try to make Entourage a place that schools can go to get opinions on technology. So technology for schools means they don't need the bleeding edge, mm-hmm. right? What mm-hmm. they need is they need what's tried and true,
right.
what's got the privacy data secured for their students, you know, what's right for them, not transient.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we always incorporate. You know, for us as to how we stay on top of it, you know, I just surround myself. You know, Entourage is full of creative people with a passion for serving schools, passion for technology, and, you know, we love what we're doing. So
you can tell your staff is so engaged.
Yeah.
Lovely.
We spent the whole summer this year just, you know, getting feedback from serving our schools last year and saying, okay.
Well, that was your recent advisory conference, our advisors conference.
Absolutely.
And so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the advisors conference is something that our schools have been asking us for, which is we need more help, not only from Entourage, but we'd love to get feedback from other advisors.
Right.
You know, what are they facing in the classroom? There are some things that they face that's really more dealing with being a teacher. You know, how do I interact with the parents? How do we fundraise and all of that type of stuff? So the advisor conference was in response to that, and we invited yearbook advisors from high schools from all across the country, all the way from California, Tennessee, New Jersey, New York. And the idea was to bring them together, present some of the latest, you know, techniques, you know, latest trends that are going on in yearbooks, and then actually give the advisors an opportunity to present themselves and say, listen, these are problems that we're facing, and this is how we solve them. And then they themselves get to kind of interact with each other and help each other. So it's been a great program. It was a huge success this year.
Yeah, well, congratulations about that, too. I think it was great. We were there. We're sure you're going to get a little footage on that. And able to see how, you know, your clients and those educators were actually helping because they know what they would like to see you guys be moving in what direction and contributing to that.
So. Yeah, I mean, to me, the biggest thing that I learned from that event was how much what we do in the little things that we do make a difference. You know, when, you know, the we're not just a yearbook company that prints books, right? We're there with them. We're answering the phone calls. We're providing resource materials. We're providing technologies. We're helping them in the classroom. So it's in all these little aspects of what's in our service model that I really learned. And I said, listen, we got to really pay more attention to, you know, the resources. We got to pay more attention to how to help the teachers teach these classes, how the students are going to learn. So these were the big lessons that we got from the event.
Yeah, I know there were quite a few of them. Talk about the privacy. I am interested in that. How does that work with you all? I know it's such a massive, you know, undertaking as far as privacy
data privacy is a huge topic of conversation, not just for students and schools, but just in general. You know, you've got sites like Facebook and Google, Gmail, you know, Twitter. They're all collecting your information, retargeting it, and then using it to actually provide you some type of advertisement or some type of experience in order to kind of, you know, provide a marketing vehicle product that they can sell to other companies. And so, and obviously that's not something that's, you know, we got to be sensitive to that for everybody, but more so, I think, for the students. And
absolutely.
So, there's a whole series of legislation that's just not caught up with where the technology is, just like there is in a lot of areas in terms of what data are technology companies allowed to collect, how mm-hmm. are they allowed to use it, how can they aggregate it, mm-hmm. what information can be shared between schools, what information can be shared with vendors. And so...
So interesting.
So all of that needs to be kind of considered, especially, you know, when it comes to student photography.
Right.
Now you've got names associated with students and making sure that that stays secure, making sure that how they actually, students use those pictures doesn't get shared with the wrong companies and everything like that.
Absolutely.
So there are a whole series of privacy acts that are in place right now. Companies like Google, which is trying to push Gmail and a lot of the Google products into the schools. These days, if you see a lot of classrooms use the Google tools in the classrooms, they have to turn off a lot of their data collection technology that they use, mm-hmm. that they normally use when you and I are using Gmail.
Right.
But because of the fact that they simply, you know, for privacy purposes and for respecting the, you know, what's going on in the classroom, that they want to turn a lot of that off.
It really is a whole issue in itself. One of our clients at our public relations company is called Privo.
Okay.
Do you know that name?
No, I know.
They've been on the show and so on. They were one of the seven companies that were building the infrastructure charged, but you know, as from the government to actually help build the security for privacy of children online.
Absolutely.
And you know, I think it's amazing how gray it is.
Yeah.
And so in your position at the Entourage, you know, yearbook company, all of the stuff that you're doing, you know, you have to be so sensitive to that. So I think it's interesting.
Absolutely.
And if you're working with the school systems, that's really great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of it eventually is going to be, you know, considered as part of the big picture, really.
Absolutely. I mean, For us, and why we're different from a lot of other those kind of technology companies is ultimately our customer and our client is the schools. And
right.
So, you know, wherever they have policies for privacies is we make sure that we don't use the least common denominator. We use the highest common denominator
yeah.
in terms of privacy and security mm-hmm. settings. You know, you've worked with some of these other organizations, you know, like a Facebook or a Google. Mm-hmm. A majority of their revenue is not coming from the schools. It's mm-hmm. actually coming from the advertisers.
Right.
And so there is a kind of a conflict of interest that
right.
happens there that they're struggling with and they're working through because, you know, these are all socially responsible companies.
Right.
But they do have a conflict of interest.
No, absolutely. Wow, like I said, a whole other show on that, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about your products now in the Entourage Go.
Sure.
That's your new thing coming out.
So we have a brand new service that we're launching, which I'm super excited about. It's called Entourage Go. Go is in response to a lot of schools have come to us and say, listen, Elias, you guys provide a great yearbook service. Is there anything else that you can do for us? Can you do anything else for us in fundraising?
Right.
Can you do anything else for us in terms of some of the products we sell? And so we're launching Entourage Go in response to that. And it's a service where schools can go and they can resell photo mugs, T-shirts, calendars, you know, basically products that are kind of branded for the school. They can use it for fundraising. They can reuse some of the photographs from the yearbooks into the products themselves. And the idea behind it is to just make it more fun.
Sure.
To create more products for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's something that, you know, I think, you know, we've got a lot of interest from schools about. So.
Oh, I can just picture it. Well,
yeah.
You know, even if you think about it, like the way there used to be the school store, I don't even know if there are anymore. Why?
Yeah.
You just have it online and then have it customized and use all of the...
Absolutely.
All of the archives, everything that we work so hard to collect to make memorable. Makes total sense.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, like, you know, you get a school mug with your, you know, with your varsity number on it for your students, you know, sports.
Kids are so lucky these days.
Yeah. So, you know, those are the things that we've been looking at, and we're really excited about it.
Really exciting stuff. Tell us now a little bit about the video work that you have and tips and so on that you have for those who are this either, like you called them, the student or parent-generated content.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about that.
So we are launching a whole video initiative. So there's a couple of things that we've been seeing. And it's people think it's a little funny that we're launching a huge video initiative at a yearbook company. But video is it's going to be huge for yearbooks. And we're embracing it, and we want to use it to help our schools. So video is great for doing things like teaching. It is great for introducing new products, introducing techniques. So we're launching Entourage Live, which is our live online show where we go and do 30-minute segments on how to, you know, what are some of the great Photoshop tips and tricks, you know, how to organize your yearbook, how to use the Yet Online software. And this is not just for our customers, it's just people who are interested in yearbooks. They can come in, they can what's nice about these online live shows is they can participate, they can ask questions. So it's meant to be a lot of fun.
Give us a couple examples of some of the tips that you offer and kind of tell people about.
Sure. So a couple of them. Well, you know, I think the biggest ones are just, you know, a lot of it's around photography and organizing your photographs. We're planning on having a show on how to edit photos, how to look at photos from a yearbook editor's point of view. So what you're looking for in that case is you're not only looking for just high quality photographs, but you're making sure you got good coverage of your students, everybody's kind of representing the school in a proper way, you know, you're using the aspect ratios, understanding how to use photographs on the design of the page. So there's a lot that you can kind of do there.
I think that's really important to mention because, you know, there was the yearbook club and there was that editorial, like, training and education, you know, behind that. So now you're going into a technology place and all of that makes total sense. And at the same time, to be able to give the kids those angles, like you say, thinking from an editor's perspective.
Absolutely.
I just actually have to say, like, it must be such a challenge to have a high school system have, you know, be your client, and then they have 1,000 students, and you all are in charge of making sure that that content is correct from an editorial perspective as well. How do you do that? Like, let's hear about that a little bit, because it's just amazing as an undertaking.
Yeah, it is probably the hardest part, which is just making sure that doing the final checks and the editing on the book. It's the hardest part, the highest stress part, not only for the schools and for the editors, but for the teachers and for us. And so it's something that we take very seriously. A lot of it's on the editors, right? We don't know the students and everything like that. So they've got to kind of work with them, make sure that they capture the book correctly. What we do once we get to it is we have a whole series. I think we're up to 14 QC checks that happen to the book once it comes to us. And we're looking for everything from inappropriate content to, pages that aren't, you know, could be designed a little bit better, to stuff that might be cut off when it gets when it gets bound. So we do all of that as well once the book comes to us. And it's through this kind of joint QC and editing process that we can get to a higher quality book at the end. But I think you hit it on the head. I mean, it's one of the hardest part of making a yearbook is getting it finished.
Well, I do think so. And I also think that, you know, in one person's eyes, what would be appropriate to another person's eyes. And at the end of the day, you're serving all of these people and the future of their generations that go back and look at what is a yearbook.
Absolutely.
I laugh because my husband's name is Jan.
Okay.
Right? So I can always answer any call when they call. Is Jan here? I'm Jan. On his yearbook, you know, he's gotten the red cap and gown. You know what I mean? Everything, because it's always been that way.
Yeah.
So it just must be so difficult. What about, do you have any thoughts in your head of a recollection of a story that where you guys caught something that you would have been, like, otherwise overlooked, perhaps?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of them.
Those are fun stories for our guys out there.
There's kind of more serious ones and there's kind of funnier ones. So I'll share a serious one first. And it's something that's hard to see, but we had some students that were flashing gang signs with their hands into photographs. And unless you actually recognize them, they're kind of hard to see. And, you know, most schools do not want to have that type of thing show up inside of their books. And so, you know, we have in our QC process kind of a whole series of kind of hand gestures that we look through just manually to make sure that that's
incredible.
Caught. We don't catch, you know, we catch them all that we can, but it's, you know, it's something that we do try to make sure that we help our students out. You know, things that are a little bit lighter in terms of things that we catch is that we have some schools that are, like, more conservative in terms of how they want their students to be represented.
Oh, boy, yeah, you're really walking a lot of tightropes on the ultimate
absolutely
customer. Yeah,
so
right.
we had one school where they had a policy where all the students had, all the girls in the school has to wear skirts. I think they have to be below the knee.
Oh, my goodness,
We had photos that we had students with you know, skirts above the knees, so we contacted the school and they had to get those fixed.
I love it. No, Steve, that's all about the customer service, like you said, quality
absolutely.
Control. And if you think about that, and I'm actually giving you credit to even have a hand gestures category, because I mean, who would think of even that? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, you have to be in your shoes.
You just want to make sure that they get the best book possible. And it's what it takes to kind of get the project done. You know,
well,
people
you can
are
feel
organizing.
That you care so much about it. I love that. We only have a couple minutes left, so what about you? What else would you like to share? Anything else before the end of our show? You have a couple minutes, but I wanted to just make sure we got everything because I am so impressed. And
yeah.
I'm so excited for you all.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Is one of the steps to safer travel.
I will rock this!
You will rock this!
To know for sure that your child is in the right car seat for their age and size, visit safercar.gov/the right seat.
Cool. Very cool, very cool.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Stafford County, Virginia authorities are trying to determine why a man